The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Work and Money section of the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include Paid Family Leave Makes Some in North Carolina Nervous, and Tech Problem to Debug, Cybersecurity Not Female Friendly. And we'll begin with Paid Family Leave Makes Some in North Carolina Nervous. On Tuesday afternoon, Beth Messersmith, the campaign director of the advocacy group Moms Rising in North Carolina, arrived in Houston to visit her mother who's battling cancer. The reason she's able to travel across the country to help her mother is simple. Moms Rising provides her with paid family leave. But Messersmith says she often sees people there who have no visitors. When Messersmith is in the cancer center, she says that she regularly sees people who are alone. Their kids can't get off work, Messersmith said. The idea that that could be my mother, it just kills me. During his State of the Union address, President Donald Trump appeared to support people like Messersmith, saying, "Let's support working families by supporting paid family leave." It's not the first time Trump has come out in favor of paid family leave, an issue supported by his daughter Ivanka. During the presidential campaign, Trump promised 6 weeks of paid leave for new mothers. His 2018 budget extended the benefit to new fathers and adoptive parents and called for states to adopt 6-week paid parental leave policies. But so far, the administration hasn't proposed any specific guidelines for funding it. However, when small businesses in North Carolina hear about paid leave, they have panic and fear, said Doug Blizzard, vice president of membership at Capital Associated Industries in North Carolina. Some small businesses are concerned about having to pay for the leave and dealing with many people out on leave at the same time, Blizzard said. Small business owners have a very small margin, said Greg Thompson, NC State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. They want to be able to keep their employees, and they will do whatever they can if it's providing them leave or paid leave, Thompson said. But individual small businesses have to determine what is possible for them based on their own bottom line. In addition to the cost, a small business might only have a few employees. If more than one employee takes off at a time, they don't have a business, Thompson said. These concerns are part of why it has been so difficult to gain support for a federal paid leave policy. The Family Act, sponsored by U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, which would provide 2 months of paid leave, has already been introduced 3 times and currently has just 29 co-sponsors, none of whom are Republicans. To help reduce the cost to businesses, Kristen A. Shapiro, an assistant general counsel with the U.S. House of Representatives, recently proposed a family leave policy that would be paid for through Social Security. If you want to take off, then you can collect early Social Security benefits and defer the collection of your Social Security retirement benefit. The proposal was published by the Independent Woman's Forum, an advocacy group. the upside of this proposal is that it won't come with a tax hike. The downside, said Messersmith of Moms Rising, is that Shapiro's proposal only covers leave for the birth of a child. I think that if we take a stab at just paid parental leave, that's not going to accomplish what we need to do throughout the country, Messersmith said. And next, tech problem to debug, cybersecurity not female-friendly. Allison Ann Williams has a Ph.D. in mathematics, vast experience at the den of wizards known as the National Security Agency, and entrepreneurial chops. She's accomplished and smart. So what happened to her at a recent business meeting left her dismayed, although it is far from uncommon for women in cybersecurity. I was in the room and the fellow walked in. He stopped dead in his tracks, and the first words out of his mouth were, "You're a girl." And I said, "Yes, what were you expecting?" And Williams, founder and chief executive of Unveil, a Fulton, Maryland data security company, said, "Males hold 3 out of 4 jobs in the tech world, but it is in cybersecurity where the lack of participation of women is most acute. By one reckoning, only 14% of the U.S. workforce in cybersecurity is female. Those women that do break into the industry talk of glass ceilings, insensitivity in the workplace, a lack of mentors, and popular culture that reinforces the image of male tech workers. The gender imbalance has potential consequences for the nation's security. The United States already suffers a shortage of cybersecurity workers, even as global hacking threats grow more acute. The labor shortage is forecast to worsen. A study last year by Frost and Sullivan, a consulting firm, found that North America will face a shortage of 265,000 cybersecurity workers by 2022. Prod just about any woman at a cybersecurity firm and anecdotes pour forth. Everyone has a story where you're the only woman in the room and being asked to take notes, said Priscilla Marucci, director of strategic threat development at Recorded Future, a Boston area cyber threat intelligence firm. The cybersecurity industry writ large has yet to take the gender imbalance seriously, she says, even as some firms take big steps. Women are not getting promoted at the same rate as men are, and women are not getting salary increases at the same rate as men are, even though they are asking for and applying at the same rate, Marucci said. A number of nonprofit groups and private companies actively promote training to get younger girls involved in information security. They include GoodGirlsWriteCode.org and GirlsWhoCode.com. The Girl Scouts organization says that later this year it will add merit badges in cybersecurity. Several executives said girls winnow out of tech and cybersecurity career paths at a young age. Electronic games and movies reinforce stereotypes that tech and cybersecurity are for males, said Kim Tremblay, founder of Arctic Wolf Networks, a Sunnyvale, California security firm. Search online for images of cybersecurity researchers, Tremblay said, and you're going to get an image of a guy in a hoodie. Females see such images and feel alienation. They don't see themselves as these people with the hoodies on. In middle and high schools, girls interested in computer science and coding clubs commonly feel little social support, several executives said. Marucci recalled her own experience. They weren't unfriendly to girls, but there weren't many girls there, and as a result, that lessens the appeal. Ashley Podrasky, a professor of computer forensics at Dakota State University, is among experts trying to change this. In 2015, Podrasky founded a residential cybersecurity summer camp for girls under a trademarked name. CyberHer Security is bursting at the seams. Last year, the camp attracted 130 students from 16 states. The week-long camp is free for participants, and the costs are partly funded by the National Security Agency and a series of private corporations such as AT&T and Citigroup, she said. At the camp, girls learn things like how to find deleted messages on a phone and how to analyze photos to see where they were taken and by what device. I've heard so many times that girls aren't interested, and that's just not true, added Podastri, who is an associate professor of information security at the university. Once out in the workplace, women in cybersecurity often find themselves in a common situation, being the only woman in a room. It's a very male-dominated culture, Williams said. It can be a little more crass, a little bit more rough, and maybe some females don't like that, and it is off-putting. Even getting a foot in the door can be hard. There's a lot of unconscious bias in hiring, said Lisa Jigges, founder and chief executive of Woman Society of Cyberjitsu, a support community for women in the field. There's a conscious bias, too. For whatever reason, women aren't viewed as capable and skillful in the field. As a rule, women wait until they accrue required skills before applying for cybersecurity jobs, said Tremblay of Arctic Wolf, while men routinely bluff their way through. The men may have none of the skills and will still apply, Tremblay said. Some positive stories are out there. Williams spent 12 years working at the National Security Agency, the top secret government branch that deals in signals, intelligence, hacking, and defending against cyber attack. As she rose in the ranks, helped by male mentors, she said she was able to make inroads on the gender issue. One of the things that NSA has gotten really right is that they've done a really great job of building a cadre of excellent female mathematicians, she said. But for every positive story, there are also negative ones. Leah Figuero, lead data engineer at Gravwell, a data analytics company out of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, is a frequent speaker on cybersecurity issues at industry conferences. Yesterday, I was walking around and I had on my speaker's badge. Someone asked me whose speaker badge I was borrowing, and I was like, "This is mine," Figuero said on the sidelines of the ShamooCon Hacker Conference in Washington earlier this month. Figuero says she has professional colleagues who face diminishment at client meetings. They have clients who won't speak directly to them, she said. It's the assumption that the woman is not the lead on the project. They just default to speaking to the men. And next, some small businesses let fans and staff enjoy the big game. While customers are watching the Super Bowl at Boston's Common Ground Bar and Grill, waiters and bartenders will pause to see key moments as well. General Manager Jeff John understands his staff wants to see if the New England Patriots can win their third NFL title in 4 years. "Your first focus has to be the guest," John says, "but we all get caught in the moment from time to time." Big sporting events are often a workplace distraction, but many small business owners and managers are cutting staffers a little slack as football fans find it hard to resist chatting about Sunday's game. The Winter Olympics, the NCAA basketball tournament, and other big events are coming up, and staffers may want to tune in. Some owners realize that trying to eliminate sports talk or forbidding staffers to watch games is demoralizing and also difficult to achieve. So, as long as there isn't too much Monday morning quarterbacking or time spent in front of the office TV, bosses will go easy on fans. Some companies are even more understanding. It's okay for their staffers to watch games in break rooms, and some owners even run office pools without cash prizes. John has noticed that when the games are most exciting, customers want to watch, not order. So if waiters want to pause and see the play, he doesn't stop them. Besides, when a waiter high-fives a customer after a great play, it increases the bond between Common Ground and its diners. A flexible attitude is a good management practice for company owners, said Felipe Weiss, an attorney with expertise in employment law at the firm Seaforth Shaw in Chicago. They're not going to be able to stop people's excitement, Weiss says. Trying to do so in an unyielding or draconian way is going to backfire. If the boss sees productivity slowing or employees not tending to work that needs to be done, why suggest a firm but friendly approach? For example, if there's too much watching of NCAA games, tell staffers it's time to do a fast break back to work. David New doesn't worry about productivity at Tiny Pulse, T-I-N-Y, Pulse, his company that makes software to measure worker satisfaction and morale at other businesses. There's a TV that will show NCAA games in March, and employees will be able to watch, but they'll also be held accountable for getting the work done. Instead of fighting it, I'm going to treat you as an adult, said New, whose Seattle-based company has 100 employees. He expects staffers to cluster in front of the TV during the last few minutes of some of the games, and he'll be watching there with them. Watching TV during work was once verboten, but many employers have come to realize a more employee-friendly work atmosphere benefits everyone. When staffers feel relaxed and are allowed to share a little fun, they're more productive and do better work. Actualize Consulting used to have a policy about watching and discussing games that managing director Carrie Wakelow now calls rigid. The bosses would end conversations, and that would burst people's bubbles when they were excited, Wakelow said. The financial consulting firm, with offices in New York and Reston, Virginia, has since changed its policy. If employees want to take a couple of hours to watch a game, they can, as long as they make up the time. The bosses also run an NCAA pool in which the winnings can be used for wellness purchases like gym memberships or treadmills. Owners shouldn't run pools with pure cash prizes, which are illegal, even though employees at many workplaces have them, Weiss said. If a boss runs a pool and staffers feel pressure to take part, it could be raised in a potential lawsuit against the company, or workers who don't want to take part may resent the boss. And next, Super Bowl ads aim for the heart and sometimes lower. After a year of political and cultural upheaval, Super Bowl advertisers appear to be pulling back from themes of unity in favor of in-game stunts and ads that aim for the heart and in some cases even lower. The stakes are high since a 30-second spot costs more than $5 million for airtime alone. The goal is to capture the attention of the more than 110 million viewers expected to tune in to the big game on February 4th, ideally by striking an emotional chord with the game audience that will rub off on brands. Next best, simply drawing attention, even if an ad offends some people. Worst of all, being forgotten completely. More people will see me in this than they have in the last three movies I've made, actor and comedian Bill Hader from Trainwreck muses in a teaser for Pringles' first Super Bowl spot. Each year, Super Bowl ads offer a snapshot of the national psyche. Last year, just after President Donald Trump took office, ads offering themes of inclusion. Airbnb showed faces of different ethnicities with the copy, "We All Belong," and Coke reran an ad featuring America the Beautiful, sung in different languages. This year, following a year of heated debate over immigration, NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem, and the hashtag MeToo movement highlighting sexual misconduct, many Super Bowl advertisers are playing it safer by showcasing famous faces, focusing on inoffensive causes, and trying to stand out with silly humor and stunts. Of course, a few are going straight for whatever will grab attention. Most people remember the 2004 Super Bowl for the infamous wardrobe malfunction when Justin Timberlake ripped off part of Janet Jackson's shirt during the halftime performance. But it also featured an unusually large number of tasteless ads, including crotch and fart jokes by Sierra Mist, Budweiser, and Bud Light, and the now famous Cialis ad that warned about erections lasting longer than 4 hours. Advertisers largely dialed it back afterward. Excepting a 2009 Doritos ad that included a snow globe in the crotch joke. But this year, Justin Timberlake's return to the Super Bowl, and so does Sock It to the Lower Body humor. Groupon's ad, for instance, stars Tiffany Haddish asking people to support local businesses, then cuts to a wealthy man who plots to crush small businesses, only to double over after players nail him with a kicked football. Groupon insists the man isn't hit in the groin, although the ad video is ambiguous. The crotch hit is the lowest thing in the book, advertising age columnist Barbara Lippert said in a phone interview. I was hoping it was retired forever. The Groupon ad is also notable for its distinctively anti-one percenter tone. We think the vast majority of consumers will appreciate the over-the-top comeuppance our villain receives, said John Wild, Groupon's head of marketing for North America. An ad for Febreze air freshener goes all in for toilet humor. It presents a pseudo-documentary about a boy whose bleep doesn't stink, alluding to a profane phrase that commonly refers to people who are full of themselves. It wouldn't be a Super Bowl without celebrities chugging sugary drinks and hawking junk food. Cindy Crawford will reprise an iconic 1992 Super Bowl spot for Pepsi. The beverage maker will also feature Peter Dinklage and Morgan Freeman in linked ads for new versions of Doritos and Mountain Dew. In a Pringles ad, Bill Hader has a snack on set and introduces a made-up practice dubbed flavor stacking, in which the actor stacks together different Pringles varieties. M&M's has released a teaser showing Danny DeVito dressed as an M&M being dunked in chocolate. For a non-snacking celebrity appearance, Squarespace hired a bearded Keanu Reeves and set him by a campfire to tout its web hosting services. Other advertisers are aiming straight for warm and fuzzy, figuring it's best to bet on things that are universally liked, said Kelly O'Keefe, managing director of Virginia Commonwealth University's Brand Center. NBC created 5 cinematic 60-second ads showcasing Olympic athletes to drum up excitement for the Winter Olympics, which starting 4 days after the Super Bowl. The ads showcase American athletes such as skier Lindsey Vonn and figure skater Nathan Chin. An Anheuser-Busch ad shows a factory producing cans of water instead of beer, highlighting the brewer's donation of drinking water to places in need. It's Stella Artois brand also teams with Matt Damon to sell a limited edition of beer glass, with proceeds also targeted at providing access to water. Lexus is promoting its new LS500 luxury sedan, which is aiming at a 45 to 55-year-old demographic, with an action spot starring the Black Panther, a Marvel superhero. Recent Super Bowl ad stunts have yielded mixed results. Snickers isn't returning to the game this year after a live spot last year fell flat, but marketers aren't giving up. Tide, which last year did a fake-out ad with Terry Bradshaw that appeared to be commentary during the game, will be back with Bradshaw this year. And next, Airbnb helps disabled travelers. In response to complaints that its platform isn't always accommodating of guests with disabilities, Airbnb recently revealed new steps to address that problem. The San Francisco-based home sharing company has acquired Accommable, a London-based home sharing site that caters specifically to disabled travelers. Accommable was founded in 2015 by Siren Madhapalli and Martin Sibley, frequent travelers with spinal muscular atrophy, who became frustrated with the lack of accessible accommodations. The company will wind down its platform and integrate its home listings into Airbnb, providing accessible homes in more than 60 countries. Previously, Airbnb identified only properties that are wheelchair accessible, which, after talks with travelers and groups like the California Foundation for Independent Living Centers and the California Council of the Blind, Airbnb leaders realized wasn't good enough. Going forward, Airbnb will let guests search for the specific accessibility accommodations they require and will let hosts specify whether their homes have step-free entries into rooms, wide doorways, and other attributes. Airbnb also is making its platform easier to use for people with visual impairments, making changes such as eliminating text over images, which can be hard to read. And next, top global banking official warns of virtual currency risk. A top international banking official says that central banks should be prepared to intervene to prevent virtual currencies becoming a threat to financial stability. Augustin Karstens, the general manager of the Bank for International Settlements, an international organization for central banks, said Tuesday that Bitcoin has become a combination of a bubble, a Ponzi scheme, and an environmental disaster. In a speech in Frankfurt, Germany, Karstens said many people believe so far that, given the limited size of virtual currencies, concerns about them do not rise to a systemic level. But he added that if authorities do not act preemptively, cryptocurrencies could become more interconnected with the main financial system and become a threat to financial stability. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen the next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time.